Matt with planning on presentation of, well, Matt, you're in charge of it, but I know Susan, you're online, right? For the housing demand analysis. And I think we can jump right into it if you're ready, Susan.
About my colleague, Margaret Moore.
I'll start.
Susan, I
can launch it.
Hi, this is Margaret Lawrence. Are you able to share the screen so I can put the PowerPoint up or?
Hold on a minute. Yeah, what you have to note, the way our system works, she's going to make you co-host so you can share the screen, but you cannot, when you get done with your presentation, please don't X out because you will cancel the meeting.
Yes, that's what I heard. I will not do that.
We get rid of elected officials then.
Okay, so go ahead.
Okay. Are you seeing this?
It might be coming now.
There it is.
You go. We got it.
Terrific, okay. Good morning. My name is Margaret Lawrence and my colleague Susan Payne and I are going to present the summary of the Steuben County Housing Demand Analysis today. We were awarded this project in early March and have been working diligently on the study, and we're pleased to present a summary of the findings to you today. The study of this size and scope requires a great deal of collaboration, research and analysis. And we wanted to take the time to thank and recognize the people that helped us. Amy Dlugos, Matt Sousa, Dan Kahopka, Chelsea Robertson, and Victoria Elon with Southern Tier Central Regional Planning Board, Jamie Johnson and Jill Statz. I know they're on the meeting today. They helped us a lot with this reaching out to area employers. We spoke with a number of public officials and local realtors, contractors, and developers to finalize this study. So as you all know, Steuben County is the largest county in the Southern Tier region with 1,400 square miles. So we were asked to focus our efforts on certain communities, and we did that. With particular focuses on the villages of Addison, Bath, Hammondsport, Painted Post, Riverside, and Whalen, the city of Corning, city of Hornell, towns of Bath, Irwin, and Prattsburg. So we did an in-depth situational analysis, and the factors that we examined were the dynamics in the population with 95,000 people in Steuben County. There has been a decline in population with an average loss of about 1,600 people each year since 2010. However, it's interesting to note the city of Hornell is the second fastest growing city in New York State, and the county does employ about 40,200 people. And that has remained fairly steady from the end of 2019 through 2020. One item of concern that we did learn was the prime workforce ages 25 to 50 are going to not be able to meet the need for folks that are retiring in the next 5 to 7 years. And that's not unusual for other areas of the state as well. So recruitment and retention of employees is going to become very important. We looked at workforce retention and recruitment issues, hiring patterns, job wages, and after 2 decades of declines in Chemung, Steuben, and Schuyler counties, Steuben is looking at hiring growth for highly trained workers in sectors such as manufacturing and healthcare. Hornell has seen an increase in spike in growth, particularly Alstom, placing an increased demand for housing, retail, and healthcare. And one asset to the community is that proximity to jobs via the interstate, despite the size of the county, many people are able to get to jobs within a short period of time. And again, this is a plus. We looked at economic factors, household incomes, and the capacity to pay rent or buy, and the cost of living compared to other areas. So compared to other counties in New York State, the average weekly wage in Steuben County is among the highest at about $1,150 a week. The median household income for renters is about $30,000 a year, where a homeowner is about $61,783,000. There are areas in the county where income inequality and financially burdened households do exist. And so, for example, the greatest burden for housing costs consuming more than 30% of income occurs among renters in the villages of Painted Post, Addison, and Hammondsport. So challenges to home buyers, we looked at the age, the quality of the property, what taxes are, the inventory of existing options at all price points, and the cost of new construction. And what we found was 70% of the housing stock was built prior to 1970, and that realtors and financial institutions say that there's a shortage of housing inventory at all price points, and that's leading to a really competitive market. It's also, there's not a lot of move-in ready at all price points. So a housing stock that is a bit dated also might be suffering from deferred maintenance. So people buy a home and then they're gonna have to make an investment on top of that. Property taxes are perceived as high. And so these are some of the things and the challenges for recruitment and retention of high demand workers. We also looked at the challenges to renters, the inventory, the vacancy rates, the quality, the location, and the monthly rent ranges. And the lack of market rate rentals is an issue for area employers as well when recruiting. Oftentimes people want to rent before they look and decide where they want to live. Vacancy rates are countywide are about 5.5%, which is low, or 670 units, and compared to the US average of 6%. We found that rents range for about $596 for a studio apartment to $1,105 for a four bedroom. And most of the market rate rentals were in the cities of Corning and Hornell. The local and national trends for home buyers and renters pretty much mirrored what we know or what we were seeing in Steuben County. In terms of existing housing stock, the median home value in Steuben County is $98,200, which is among the lowest compared to New York State and surrounding counties. So for example, in Chemung County, the median is $106,000, in Schuyler, $121,000. But Allegheny is lower at $73,900. We looked at the community and neighborhood issues, the blight, the vacancy rates. There is a conversion of some of the larger single family to multifamily homes from out of state owners, which is something to keep an eye on. The need for investment in neighborhood revitalization and the role of community centers in influencing real estate values and neighborhood revitalizations. We looked at barriers, environmental, infrastructure, and financial. And one of the things that was probably a concern is broadband. 9,000 people in Steuben County do not have access to fiber or a wired internet connection. So with schools going remote and people working more remote, and the demand for internet at home or broadband at home is only on the rise. Southern Tier Network has made a great progress over the last 10 years in Steuben County and the area in general, but it will need some more financial resources to make sure that that trend continues. With that, I'm going to hand it over to Susan.
Margaret, so we're going to delve right into buyer and renter criteria. So we know Margaret has outlined our many of the
buyer and renter. Susan, I have to interrupt.
Yes.
The sound quality is in and out. Can you correct it?
Now?
She doesn't have access to broadband.
Is your broadband that good?
Can you hear me?
You're in and out, so we cannot get the full extent of your sentencing.
One second, please. Can you hear me now?
Better,
yeah.
Thank you. So we're going to look at it from the buyer and renter's perspective. We know that, as Margaret pointed out, there's two critically important factors. One is workforce retention and recruitment, and the other is long-term financial viability of the communities, and they are both housing dependent. So let's look at it from the buyer's and renter's perspective. They want attractive and stable neighborhoods. They want updated, modern, and well-maintained houses and apartments. They want choices in competitive price points, both for purchase and for rentals. They want quality options for market rate rentals, and in some communities, the options are limited. They want access to quality healthcare and schools, vibrant and attractive community centers or downtowns, close access to outdoor and open spaces, close access to services, and reasonable property taxes. We found that this is a criteria for both people who live here and want to upgrade to the quality of housing, as well as those that are relocating into the area primarily for work. So Margaret outlined many of the housing challenges. We know that much of the housing is quite old. Only 70 housing units have been constructed since 2014. Not only are they structurally old, but many have outdated interiors, primarily in bathrooms and kitchens. As Margaret pointed out, there's lack of inventory, particularly in the sale of houses in the $250,000 to $350,000 range. So if you look to the right side of the screen, what are the consequences? Well, there's limited move-in ready for both the new and the seasoned home buyer. And particularly those residents that want to move up. And what's interesting is when we speak with the realtors, they will tell you that the predominant buyer group, particularly with the low interest rates, are people who already live here and want to move up to a higher quality and higher priced house. So we know that there's lack of inventory for four prime buyer groups. The first is first-time home buyers that are looking for houses in the $90,000 to $175,000 range. Young professionals moving to the area and seeking houses in the $175,000 to $250,000. And the reason why that range is so large is because it depends on whether they're a single household or a dual income household and their ability and their financial capacity to buy. I mentioned the fact that the middle income buyers move up are a large group. They're looking for houses in the $275,000 to $325,000. Range. And then the seasoned professionals that are moving to the area that are bringing equity with them from the sale of their house in a different area. So Margaret, can we move to the next slide? So you all have received the report and it provides you with a lot of detailed information by community, but the bottom line is that there is a gap in demand. Some of that gap, again, is due to the lack of quality housing as opposed to due to the lack of new construction. So during the next 5 years, we anticipate that conservative demand for first-time home buyers, both those already living in the area who are currently renters or have not as yet left mom and dad's basement, is going to be in the 200 range. The middle income home buyers, those are both new relocating to the area and move ups, is going to be in the 200 range. And then previous homeowners with equity relocating in the 75 to 150 single family unit ranges. Margaret? Thank you. So in terms of strategies, after a detailed analysis, which is in the report that you have, we have four recommendations. The first is to invest a concerted effort into a countywide housing rehabilitation initiative to increase the stock primarily in that 90 to 175,000 inventory range, to stimulate investment in the older neighborhoods, increase property values, which is critically important, and then to reverse the potential for depreciation, which we've already seen in some of the older neighborhoods. The second strategy is to bundle vacant lots combined with demolition of sorely old properties and create buildable lots that can be developed in collaboration with local contractors and developers for new construction in that 275 to 300,000 range in target neighborhoods. And I'm gonna come back to the local contractors and developers in just a moment. The third recommended strategy is to reverse the trend of conversion from large houses to multi-family houses, particularly those older housing units that are being sold currently in the $30,000 to $75,000 price range and are being snapped up by out-of-town investors that Margaret alluded to a few minutes ago. And then the fourth is to support construction in approved subdivisions. There are approved subdivisions. Most of them are in the town of Irwin. This brings me back to strategy number two about local contractors and developers. So the demand in Steuben County is not large enough to attract a major developer to come in and build a brand new subdivision. The demand just isn't large enough. The vast majority of contractors and developers that are local and are excellent developers. But the problem is that they do not have the capacity to build out the subdivisions in terms of spec houses and are building custom houses in response to individual contracts and demand. There's a lot of reasons for that that we don't have time to go into today. But there are existing subdivisions that are owned by local contractors as well as outside of the region developers, and there is potential to continue building them out. The vast majority of these are in the 425,000 plus range, which does not meet the sweet spot or the highest demand that's in that 275 to $300,000 range. Margaret? So what about multifamily housing? And we were asked to focus exclusively on market rate, not low or moderate income and not senior or any other subsidized housing. So we looked only at market rate housing. And there's been significant development, as many of you know, in new construction of beautiful market rate housing in both Corning and Hornell during the last couple of years. And that has very much met the significant demand that was identified 3 years ago. And that demand was identified as an excess of 500. So now the expected unmet need during the next 5 years is only for about 100 to 150 units. The most important thing is the demand is at a lower price point than all of the new construction and new developments that have taken place in the last couple of years. The majority of the new construction has been in the $1,500 to $1,800 range. We know that the demand is for 1 and 2 bedroom units in the $950 to $1,500 maximum ranges. And we also know that there needs to be addressed the increasing number of single family houses being converted, which we've mentioned. So who is looking for market rate housing? We know that there's three primary groups, which is on the right-hand side of your screen. The first is upper income empty nesters. Those are people who already live here. They're currently living in a house. They're in the 60 plus age group and their intention is to remain in the area, but perhaps have a vacation a home or plans for extensive travel once COVID passes. And that actually would free up housing and would meet the demand for them to have a change of lifestyle. Again, we mentioned workforce recruitment, which is critically important. Housing is the number one issue with recruitment. And again, going primarily to the professional workers that are being recruited, and then the young professionals and the middle income people who are entering the job market. So they're from here originally, they're coming back to the area, they might have left for college or graduate school and are relocating back to the area. We know also, in addition to new construction, that it's critically important to update the market rate apartment buildings that were built in the 1980s and 90s. Many of them require upgrades to meet consumer expectations, both externally and within the units. And then there definitely is an opportunity to convert vacant upper story to market rate housing in many of the community cores that are undergoing downtown revitalization. Margaret? So this is the forecast for demand. We expect in that 55 plus category that I mentioned, or the potential empty nesters, is going to be about 30 units, young professionals about 30 to 40, and then professionals relocating to the area about 50 to 70. So even though there is a gap in demand, they are not overwhelmed. It's not an overwhelming gap as it was a couple of years ago. So Margaret, please. So in terms of market rate housing, we have three recommendations. And for those of you who have not been to Hornell and seen the beautiful new construction, the photo on the top right is one of those brand new market rate units that have been recently constructed by Reedman. So we recommend three strategies. The first is new construction of market rate housing to fill that demand, although it's a small number. Strategy two is to renovate and upgrade existing apartment complexes. This is critically important. Number three, again, as important, is to continue that conversion of vacant upper stories for market rate apartments in mixed use properties in the downtown cores. Margaret? So we've mentioned vibrant communities in downtown cores all the way from one of the very first slides that we shared with you about what is the most important criteria for people relocating and or remaining in the area as residents. And we know that vibrant community cores and stable neighborhoods is critically important. So in addition to talking about what are the gaps in single family housing, what's the demand in terms of an individual housing unit, either for purchase or rent, just as important is the vibrancy of the communities and the strong neighborhoods. So it's important, it will be important in the future to continue to upgrade basic infrastructure, streets and sidewalks and lighting and other facade improvements. to offer broadband, which Margaret mentioned is becoming even more and more important, to maintain strong community cores, which goes to downtown revitalization strategies, and then dynamic and very attractive gateways into the communities, whether that's off of an interstate or whether that's off of a major county connector road. So, Margaret? So we have four recommendations as it relates to neighborhood revitalization. We recommend working with the communities to utilize tools for neighborhood revitalization, and that might be as simple as more aggressive code enforcement. We also recommend assembling community investment projects, primarily in the downtown cores, but that also focus on neighborhoods. We recommend engaging with the area planning and community development organizations, ranging from the Steuben County IDA, Southern Tier Central, Three Rivers Development Corporation, Arbor Housing, and so on, to continue the more and more community investment projects. We recommend a focus on downtown revitalization with upper story housing component. We also recommend number three is to leverage assets to really promote the home buyer resources that are currently available. There are a number of resources that are available for housing, banking institutions, and so on. And we know in other communities that a comprehensive and outreach home buyer education and pipeline resource, which actually Arbor is very good at that, can be extremely effective. And then we also recommend a countywide communication program that targets all of the homeowners that we've mentioned. So Margaret, can we go to the next slide? So I think what you've grasped from our presentation and series of conclusions and recommendations is that this is not a one-dimension strategy, but rather it's a multi-dimensional strategy that we hope would focus on not only improving the housing stock, but many of the other underlying issues, such as maintaining, increasing the population base, which has been slipping. It goes directly to the importance of talent attraction and retention of a workforce. And when we speak with all the employers, housing is rate number one. It's the common denominator as the biggest issue among all of the employers that are attempting to recruit from outside the county. It's also, if you look at the fourth bullet, it also goes to removal of blight and revitalization of the neighborhoods and increasing property values and stabilizing the tax base in communities. We also recommend not inventing new, but rather leveraging many of the assets that you already have and just being more effective at implementation or leveraging their capacity that ranges from the land bank to Arbor Housing and then the development organizations that I mentioned earlier, as well as realtors, local contractors, and the financial institutions. So, yeah, we know at the end of the day, the very last bullet is that there's also an opportunity to take advantage of shifting consumer priorities, particularly as the result of COVID. And we know that people are looking for healthier, less dense places to live that give them access to outdoors, healthcare, schools, and open space. And Steuben County has all of those. So the ability of Steuben County to upgrade the housing stock could be extremely appealing to people from throughout the country who are looking to meet these criteria. So Margaret, the last, yeah. So thank you. And we'd like to receive any questions that you might have. We know that we flew through this pretty quickly because we knew that there was a time constraint and you all have your the detailed report, but do you have any questions for us, please?
Aaron?
Sure. I know that I've talked with developers before of subdivisions, and one of the concerns that some of the smaller ones have is opening up the subdivisions and starting to be taxed on those lots at much higher rates before they're selling those off. Have you seen anything, Susan, where communities offer some sort of incentive for them to get them opened up and working on them without starting the taxation on those for the higher per lot values?
Yes, there are, and we could add that to our recommendations. Not so much in New York State, that's primarily outside of New York State. But, and you're talking almost exclusively in the town of Irwin, is that correct?
Yes.
Yes, because that's where all of the subdivisions are located, and the approved lots are all located in the predominantly in the town of Irwin. There's also been an issue, and I don't want to go down this path in great detail, but, you know, infrastructure and the extension of roads, water and sewer has been a very high cost. And the town, the towns have worked very, very hard to share the cost, but it has been, it's been a hurdle, and it's very difficult to acquire New York State funding for any kind of housing development or extension of infrastructure for housing. So that's been a contributing factor over the years as well.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely an impediment.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So Susan, this is Hilda.
Yes, Hilda.
In Corning, the Northside Blodgett project,
right.
I've had several people who were interested at the beginning when the pricing was like $150,000, $175,000 per house. Now it's like $250,000.
Yes.
And Hilda. So mm-hmm. it's a concern.
It is. And if you look at our report, it's in there. It is a concern, definitely, Hilda. And I think it's going to be a slow go in filling those. And in fact, the 250 now is at the bottom. And that number is actually going to be higher. And those units do not have basements. And they're on very small lots. So it is an issue. And so that's why we place such an emphasis on revitalization of the existing housing stock. The cost for developers to come in and build out subdivisions just doesn't make sense for the developers' bottom line. And to your response, and that's why you see them responding to one house at a time and one custom house at a time, because there isn't the volume. You know, if you go to other large communities, if you were to go to a Rochester or a Syracuse, where a developer can undertake a subdivision build out that might have 250 or 300 houses, then all of a sudden it starts making financial sense and they can see a return on investment more quickly. But the demand isn't large enough in Steuben County. And so that's forcing the contractors and developers to go one house at a time. And that's what, and so they're all customized, and that's what's driving up those costs. Yeah.
Matt, I'm wondering if you have any comment or something you want to add on this report.
Not completely. I want to thank Susan and Margaret for presenting. I think this is really interesting data. A lot of it is not terribly surprising. I think we know what the issues were. Some of the issues were prior to this report, but I think having numbers behind it really emphasizes and drives home the point. she gave me a lot of work to do, that's for sure. There's a lot of action items that I think we can take from this report. I think the major takeaway is that we don't want this to be a plan that just gets shelved and collects dust. I think this is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the work that I'd like to do from the planning department, and hopefully with the legislature and with contractors going forward. So, yep.
So what is the next step?
I think a large part is now that we have an actionable plan in place, we can use this as a jumping off point for identifying targeted grants and funding to do a lot of this rehab work. I haven't been terribly involved at all, hardly with the land bank, but I think the land bank does address a lot of these issues. I think really gaining momentum in that front would be absolutely helpful. And strategic revitalization issues. I know Susan and we have a meeting later this afternoon. Bath's undertaking a strategic revitalization plan that will have some actionable items. I think one of the main takeaways, I guess, from this is we consistently hear throughout this presentation that a lot of the developments are located in Corning and Hornell. It's all Corning and Hornell, which isn't altogether surprising, but there are other parts of the county that I think could see some real targeted development and attention and revitalization that could then attract those market rate homes and then become a place where people moving into the county or moving up or buying up would like to settle. So I think, stepping out of the shadows of Corning and Hornell and addressing the rest of the county as a whole, I think would be a nice start as well.
And Paul?
One thing I'd just like to mention as a representative of Hornell, I am glad to see that the research showed that there needed to be lower cost alternatives in terms of developments in the future. As I know, the two main developments in Hornell, down by the airport and up on Fairlawn Avenue, were a little bit on the higher side. And I actually heard, that some of the people that moved in there, once they got to Hornell, realized they could get lower pricing and comparable housing at lower pricing. So I am happy to see that, because that was one of my concerns with the new developments from the IDA. But one thing I do question, I'm sure your guys' research is stronger than my intuition, but I just still think that on the low end, the cost for housing seems a little high from what I'm hearing. I would like to be requested in that area, but I don't know exactly where we pulled the information from, but 950 seems a little high, because I know some housing for a 30-year mortgage you can get for $500 a month, $500-$600 a month, so for a house.
Right.
I don't know. So, that's all.
Yeah. So no, they're excellent points, and we did consider them carefully. And you'll notice that we do recommend that those higher, we did point out quite loudly that those rents of the new construction are all on the high side, and that demand has been filled. And there is a significant demand for rent in the 750 to 900, 900 range. So you're absolutely right. In addition to that, the single family housing market, there's a significant demand. There's just lack of inventory. And there's lack of inventory in housing that's been renovated. You do have buyers, very much people who want to buy, they want to live here. But when they look for a house, they're going to look not only at the individual house, they're going to look at the block, they're going to look at the neighborhood, and they're going to look at the community core to make sure that the investment that they're going to make for the next 20 or 30 years is going to provide them with a return on that investment, and that they can feel confident that the neighborhood is going to continue, that investment is going to continue throughout the entire neighborhood, and the property values are going to stay the same, and they're not going to see depreciation, three houses down. So that's why we keep emphasizing the fact that targeted neighborhood revitalization is just as important. And downtown core, Matt mentioned the Village of Bath. I'm part of a team that is developing an economic development strategy for the revitalization of Bath with a focus in the historic district and exit I-86 exit area. And we recommend that there be targeted community revitalization and project development in all of the targeted communities that were identified in this report. And we know that Hornell, we're not concerned about Corning, but we know that Hornell recently received a designation of the DRI funding. But the other communities are going to need a lot of assistance with development of economic development strategies targeted at both their community cores or their downtowns, as well as neighborhood revitalization. So it's just as important as, new construction. They both need to be considered simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. This is Gary Swackham. I have a question.
Yes, sir.
You hit it right on the head about being overpriced on the apartments. I have some apartments and people are calling, wanting to decrease their rent amount, and they have moved into these new apartments. And so why would I not want to take a older house and put it in two apartments when I can rent them almost immediately?
Right. And I'm not suggesting that that not happen, but it becomes an issue if an entire neighborhood converts to that, because there is a link between property appreciation and whether or not there's a good balance in terms of renters and home ownership. So the concern is a momentum of housing being converted and a large number of houses being converted in a particular neighborhood. It's not that there shouldn't be any, it's just a caution that it not become a large portion of that neighborhood.
Well, how would you suggest a city or a village control that without putting limit on apartments or houses?
Yeah, actually, there can be a restriction on number of apartments that can, into how many apartment units a house can be divided up into. But it's also capturing, and I think I mentioned it earlier, it's capturing some of those older houses that are vacant and are extraordinarily poor condition, and capturing them by local owners and developers such as yourself. Because we know that if a housing unit is owned and divided into multi-housing is owned by a local developer, someone who lives in the area, the odds are that quality of conversion is going to be significantly higher than if an out of town or out of county, I'm going to say an absentee landlord from Long Island. You know, that's the issue. Yeah.
Okay. And the other question is, like I stressed before, you're absolutely right. These people moved into these new apartments and then they find out that either they can't afford them or they can rent something even bigger for less money. And as you had stated before, these are overpriced.
Yeah, and it all goes to, the developer's costs, and it is understandable. Yes.
Yeah. So this is Hilda again. So one of the questions or problems we've had in City of Corning, especially when I was on city council, is code enforcement for those absentee landlords and putting enough teeth into the guidelines so that these people are held accountable to make sure their properties are well maintained. And I don't think local, not just Corning, but local areas have had enough teeth in the matter to make it happen. So I think that's a big part of it as well.
You're right on target, Hilda. And if you notice, one of our recommendations is stronger code enforcement. That's an extraordinarily valuable tool in housing revitalization.
It's Gary Swackhammer. I have one other statement is that Hornell is basically a one pony city. We have Austin, and when their contracts are down, which were for many different years, and GE and so on, as the companies change names, why would people come in and continue to build when the housing and the people are on contract with Austin? If Austin doesn't get a contract, then people aren't going to be here. You didn't mention that into it. To me, it's a very important item.
Well, there's no question, and it goes to, you know, and the recruitment. We can't predict, you know, what Alstom is going to do any more than, you know, we can predict what Kearney Incorporated, you know, is going to do. And that is a risk that the developer, in this case, it was Reedman. That is a risk that Reedman takes. Now, what we don't know, and it's between the developer and the company, is whether or not there's been a guarantee of X number of units that are rented over a period of time, and we don't have access to that information.
Thank you.
Carol, you have a question or a comment?
In the past, the community development Black grants have been a real source of support for municipalities and for revitalizing individual homes. Are there other grants? And that's basically dried up as far as I know. But
yeah.
Are there other grants for individual homeowners?
There is not a large amount other than block grant. Although I do want to say that it's just not necessarily the housing revitalization, but the community cores, and which is just as important as the neighborhood revitalization and individual houses. And I know that Jamie Johnson's on the line and he might be able to speak to it as well. But right now, you know, all the state grant fund, not all, but many of the state grant funding programs are on hold. You know, during this COVID period, we're not quite sure where that's going to go in terms of community revitalization, infrastructure development, infrastructure upgrades. But what we do know is when those dollars do become available, we want to have projects ready to go. And that's why one of the recommendations was very clearly for the county's planning department to work closely with the other planning agencies in the area, such as Three Rivers, STC, and so on, to have community investment and revitalization projects teed up, have them planned, so that when those dollars become available, you're ready and can respond with projects immediately. So I know, Jamie, you're with us on that. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I think the only thing I'd like to add is that, you know, funding for housing is a very tricky thing because many of the programs don't, we see the grant programs and the incentive programs are not dedicated or housing is not allowed underneath them. For example, the IDA cannot do a housing project unless it's tied to a downtown development or redevelopment opportunity, which typically means a multi-unit. So when you get talking about single family residential, it becomes much more difficult. So I think Susan's recommendation of Susan and Margaret in the plan to talk about, you know, how we make sure we align our efforts to take advantage of, you know, future investments to be able to leverage single family housing is critical as we move forward. So, you know, for example, if, you know, we're building infrastructure to a location or site, we should be, you know, aligning those efforts to make sure or see if there's an opportunity to allow that infrastructure to be expanded for, you know, for residential use if necessary. But, you know, housing is a tricky, you know, a tricky type of investment when it comes to trying to identify public resources to move it forward.
The only thing I would like to add is that there are a number of programs, federal programs, that are available to low and moderate income families for housing improvements, upgrades. And those are administered in our region, are administered by Arbor Housing. So for the first time home buyers, there's not grants for them to actually purchase the house, but there is some grant funding, limited grant funding available for upgrades and rehabilitation of those housing units, but it is income restricted.
Okay, I think we're, the only comments I have to offer is that the advent of the land bank that the county legislature has undertaken is, you know, move towards this redevelopment of older housing stock, but one house at a time, and it's a slow process. But I do think, Susan, this study melds well with what we're trying to do for the Bath Economic Development Revitalization. So we should be able to use it to mine some grants and maybe get the housing stock improved here in this community. So with that, I will let, no, you cannot, Margaret, do not X out that co-host, please.
You don't want me to stop sharing?
Yeah, you can close out your presentation, I believe.
Stop share?
Yeah, but just don't leave the meeting.
I won't, I promise.
And we will be done soon.
Okay, that's fine.
Kelly?
I just wanted to say that as far as the housing study was concerned, we talk about giving code enforcement more teeth and more effective rules and regulations for landlords, but is there anything we can do on the flip side of that? We never talk about this white elephant in the room where the tenants are a lot of times part of the problem, that are destructive and not respectful of a property when they're living in it, and it falls upon a landlord who invests in the property who then gets in trouble with code enforcement, who has to do something about it, and then they also have a very difficult time in evicting someone who is a problem tenant. We should be addressing some of those concerns as well.
The new governor.
If there's anything that can possibly be done on that end, why can't we make some of the tenants accountable for their behavior and their destructive nature in properties? And that might solve some of the blight issue.
Good point.
Okay, thank you, Kelly.
Landlord's responsible.
Point well taken. All right.
And one closing comment.
Sure. Scott.
Right now. As a, normally, it's not.
As a former landlord that at one time I had 38 rentals in the city of Corning and Elmira, it's really aggravating for landlords who are often given a bad rep because of whether they're a vacant landlord or they're a slum lord or anything else. There's a lot of us that weren't or aren't. But it's kind of frustrating when we do these development projects and bring in the big guys from out of town to build these wonderful facilities like where the old Corning Hospital is now, and give them all sorts of incentives and breaks. And they start charging rents in the $1,200 to $1,500 range when there's still locals who own rental properties that get absolutely no breaks at all, except for increased code enforcement.
Yep.
So we end up penalizing the local little guy and reward the Reedmans of the world who come in and spend multi-million dollar.
Thank you, Scott. All right, moving on. Aaron?
I was just going to say that I heard multiple landlords in Hornell complain about that. Landlords who do a nice job of keeping their places up, and they're saying, you know, we put all this money in, And then Reedman gets all these breaks and comes in and does this. So
I heard those same complaints mm-hmm. as well.
Okay, thank you. Next item on the agenda. Thank you, Margaret. Thank you, Susan. County Manager Chris, do you have anything? Okay. Next up will be representatives for Cooperative Extension in Schuyler County. We have two guests online, Erica Herman and Phil Cherry. They're going to talk about the Heat Smart program that they operate that will extend down into this county as a cooperative effort. Are you there?
Great. Thank you for having me today. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Awesome. So Phil wasn't able to join me. He's actually leading our staff meeting today. But if you have, I'll be taking lots of questions, and if anything needs to get passed on to him, I'm happy to do so. Amber, would I be able to share my screen if that's okay?
Yes.
Thank you. Great, I'll just get this started. So I'm just going to just do a brief presentation. Some of the slides I'll go a little quicker through just so I can leave plenty of time for questions that people are interested in. So I'll make sure to do that. So again, thank you for having me. My name is Erica Herman. I'm the new HeatSmart FLX South campaign director. And I'll be getting into what that means in just a moment, but we'll be looking at the main two steps to energy savings and comfort in the home. So this program is community-based. It's run through, again, as Amber mentioned, Cornell Cooperative Extension over in Schuyler County, but we're going to be serving Steuben as well as some of our neighboring communities. So we're really excited to work with residents, small businesses, which also includes landlords, as well as nonprofits in your region. So really excited. We will dive into what heat pumps mean. Some of you might be familiar. I know a couple years ago, this was a very foreign term for me as well. And the goals of these are this new type of heating and cooling system is to bring down heating and cooling costs in the home, to increase comfort, health, and safety. And also, since a lot of our homes in this region are oil, propane, or other fossil fuel based, to lower our carbon footprint. So we are not the first one of this. We are the 21st out of 22 of these Heat Smart programs. And we are supported again by our extension office, the New York State Energy and Research Development Authority, where I call it New York State Energy for short, and our local legislatures. So our main two steps that we're looking for this program are weatherizing homes, which can help make homes more appealing. I know that was a big conversation that Susan and Margaret were just talking about. So this ties right into that vision. So we have weatherizing home. If you look at the person I call in the bunny suit or the white suit, they are doing some insulation work on the home. And we're also looking at air sealing, which I'll chat about. But the goal is to install heat pumps. So by getting this weatherization work done, we can have this clean heating option. So what do we do? Again, weatherization, this is for renters, homeowners, landlords, small businesses, nonprofits. It's really for everybody to help out our communities. So we're looking at sealing the cracks and also providing insulation. So think about your favorite sweater that you own. It's nice and cozy. That is your insulation. We'll pretend that we'll personify you or have you be the house. So we have our nice insulation. And then we walk outside, and as we know on these fall days, some of them are quite chilly, and a burst of wind comes up onto us. And now we're still feeling cold. We have insulation, but we need some air sealing. So we tuck on our rain jacket, and we're nice and cozy now. We have our insulation and we have our air sealing. There are a lot of different programs to get this type of funding to help support our neighbors, our family members, and others in our community. So this is just, don't have to memorize all these kind of weird looking numbers, but there's basically programs for everyone of everyone income. So just kind of glancing at these programs quickly, for those households who are under 60% state median income, you could also think of it as someone who might be HEAP or SNAP income eligible. We are looking at two different programs providing insulation, air sealing, and safety checks. If we look on the left, we have the New York State Empower Program that, in addition to all those wonderful items for energy efficiency, can also replace fridges and also do other energy efficiency updates, such as LED light bulbs and much, much more. So that state program offers $7,000 to $10,000 absolutely free for the landlord and the homeowner, landlords, homeowners, and renters. And if we're looking at the sister program, we fondly call WAP on the left, or right, sorry, getting my sides mixed up, the Weatherization Assistance Program. In addition to those nice items in the middle we talked about, they can do window and door replacement. That's very common, especially in mobile homes, and also looks at some heating options. So that program provides around $6,000. So we're looking at a max of up to maybe $16,000 worth of free upgrades for the home. The sister weatherization assistance program at some points in time does ask for a small portion from the landlord, but currently during this COVID period that has been waived for a short while. So get in while you can. If someone is a bit above that income, we have the assisted home performance program. And this provides that insulation air sealing we're all looking for. It ends up being a 50-50 matching grant of $4,000 to $5,000 of free money. So that would look like if you had a $10,000 project, just for easy math, half would come from the homeowner or the landlord, and the other half would come from the program, which is great. All right, so speeding right along, we are looking at the different heating elements that we have right here. So I'm just gonna do a quick annotation so you guys can see a little more if that's able. Awesome. Okay, so we're looking at a lot of places have, sorry, just trying to get the technology working. We have our propane furnaces and our propane boilers, which are really prevalent in our area. We also might have oil going on in our systems, which are really costly. So if we're looking at the propane sections at the top, we're seeing that cost of about $3,000-ish or more. That's affecting our households. However, if we look at doing heat pumps, those are only about $1,000, so one third of the cost. So that really reduces the energy burden for a lot of households. If you're a landlord and you are have heat included, that will be saving you a lot of money. And then you just, is it good for everyone overall? So I'm just gonna clear these images and keep speeding along. Ooh, sorry, little tech issue. There we go. We'll just keep the stars on there for a little bit. So heat pumps, what are they? How are they good for me? What is this talk? So if we look at the left-hand side, we have air source heat pumps, which are an option for heating. This item, you have an indoor component, which is usually called a mini split, and you will also have an outdoor component or a compressor. If you have a ducted system, they can do a retrofit, which is great, especially for those older housing stocks where homes are a lot more compartmentalized. And if we look to the right, we have another option of ground source or geothermal heating pumps. And that is usually called the hula hoop system, where there's a trenched area that the coolant line goes in. I know I grew up in the country, if anyone else grew up on well water. So let me just jump back into things. Sorry about that, folks. Great. So still this concept of a heat pump, this is something brand new. What is this? Well, everyone has one in their home. It's actually your refrigerator. Your refrigerator is a heat pump. If you have an older style, you can feel on the back the heat, the coils, and that is from the system pushing out the warmth to keep things cool inside. So heat pumps are great. They work down to negative 13 degrees at full capacity and keep functioning after that. If you have an air source version, it's 2 to 3 times more efficient, or ground source 4 to 5 times more efficient than traditional heating systems. And what are those traditional systems? Those are the propane, oil, and electric resistance types. So great benefit. It can also cool homes. So if you've never had air conditioning, this is a great efficient way to do it, which can also be helpful for our older community members who need that, especially during the hot summer days. So again, we can do retrofits. If you're looking at doing a ground source heat pump, you can do a duct retrofit, and sometimes also with hydronic systems that are pre-existing. So incentives. Basically, if you have air source and ground source heat pumps, a lot of the current incentives are through the major utility companies. So a lot of us have NYSEG in this area. So if you have an air source and you want some heat pumps in your home, but not all of it, you get $500 for each of those little outdoor components I showed earlier, and $1,000 per 10,000 British thermal units, a unit measurement that's used for all heating types if you're looking to put it throughout your home. If you're doing ground source, that's full home only incentive of 1,500 per 10,000 British thermal units. And if you are a market rate customer and you have enough tax liability, meaning you owe in taxes, there's a 26% incentive there. And then there's a little bit of incentives also for heat pumps, ranging from $700 to $900. If you have a municipal electric customers where you're living, maybe it's yourself, there are additional comparable incentives as well. So thank you for hanging with me. You kind of did that all in a quick whirl. But what we're looking from the extension is to work with the different community legislatures. We're looking to know that you know that we're here to help the communities of Steuben, help save money and energy, knowing that we have your support to refer people to us so we can help them through this process and really make it accessible to all income levels. And knowing that heat pumps are a viable mean of keeping your homes, you know, cozy in the winter, but also in the summer. So we're hoping for your support in a resolution. We have drafted one for your viewing if there's interest. But yeah, thank you so very much for having me. Again, my name is Erica Herman. You can reach me at the extension's main number 535-7161 or heatsmartflxsouth@cornell.edu. And we're super excited to have our website coming up soon. So for a limited edition time, if you're looking at the third chart, the less than 80%, which was that 50-50 matching grant, until the end of the year, they've actually boosted that to up to 120% our immediate income. So that means if you have a household of two at about roughly $80,000 or a household of four about $115,000, they can do that matching grant if they get approved prior to the end of the year. So again, thank you so very much for your time, and I hope I didn't take too much of it. And I'm happy to answer any questions, or you can communicate with me later.
Thank you, Erica. I'm sorry that I'm going to cut you a little short because we're running too long today.
Can I ask a quick question though?
Very quickly.
So, Erica, are you guys working with ProAction, our ProAction agency here, which does some of what you're already doing, and maybe they can do referrals?
Yeah. So I already chatted with Amy Guest, and we're kind of in cahoots already and doing some plotting. We're also trying to see if we can streamline some of the application process because there's some parts that are more complicated that don't exist in other counties. But yeah, we're excited to work together. And as soon as we get our official site and materials out, we're excited to share them between us. So very excited to be working with ProAction.
Okay, thanks for the information, Erica. Sure. Thanks for hanging around.
Sure. And I know we have to go, but I'm just going to quickly put my contact information in the chat for everybody to access for later. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Robin, can we get that presentation sent to us with the link?
Yes. Okay. We'll do that.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
Okay, no other business. Ask for an adjourn.
Motion.
Adjourn.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Don't be.